Welcome into What in God's Name. She's Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
And it's so good to have Shayna back in the Shayna chair.
Thank you, Chris. It's so good to be back.
Shayna's in the Shayna chair and Chris is in the Chris chair. And so all is well in the What in God's Name podcast universe.
Wonderful. Speaking of the What in God's Name podcast universe, we want to extend an especially warm welcome today to those who may be tuning in for the first time. We're so glad that you took the time to find us and to take a listen. What in God's Name endeavors to explore current events through a theologic and philosophical lens.
Shayna and I are Christians now, but we weren't always Christians. And so both of us have...
Well, Chris, you're Christian. I'm Christian plus.
Okay. See, I keep mischaracterizing...
I'm not exclusively Christian.
I used to say that both of us were grounded in Christianity, and then...
Well, that's true.
Shayna... Wait a minute. It can't be true.
But not exclusively Christian. Yeah. So raised
Jewish. So you're Christian plus.
I'm Christian plus.
Say a little bit about that for our new listeners.
Well, I was born and raised culturally Jewish. I became a Unitarian Universalist in sort of mid-adulthood and then went to seminary and discovered Jesus in a way that I had never had access to him before. So that led me, you know, to the second half of the book. An exploration has become a real cornerstone of my faith tradition and one that I'm incredibly comfortable in and grateful for. But when I say I'm Christian plus, it simply means that I may also draw from Judaism. I may also draw from earth-centered traditions. In Unitarian Universalism, we have six sources, you know, science and reason, Judaism and Christianity, wisdom, the prophetic words of women and men throughout, you know, the ages, et cetera, et cetera. So best said, I'm a Unitarian Universalist Christian.
Shayna, very modestly, is talking about her conversion to Christianity. Is it fair to use that phrase, conversion to Christianity?
Yeah, I think if one grows up Jewish and one is going to accept Christ in any way, shape, or form, one must cross a fairly wide abyss.
So I wanted to simply add this. After the Trump rally that Shayna and I covered for What in God's Name, Shayna and I needed to go have a cocktail.
A very large cocktail.
And Shayna relayed to me, and I heard for the first time, the details of her conversion story, and maybe at some point I can coax her to share that story with our listeners. It's a beautiful, beautiful story, Shayna, and I'm totally grateful to have been able to hear that story from you.
I mean, it's a story that I think Barbara Brown Taylor captures beautifully in her latest book, where she sort of explores discovering things you love about other traditions. And she doesn't take the step of embracing those traditions, but in this particular case, I did, and I have no regrets.
So we're spending this time here at the beginning of this podcast to give our new listeners a sense of who we are and where we're coming from. Very briefly, I myself was raised nominally Christian, but more or less really effectively and for all practical purposes, materialist atheist, and found my way to Christianity through really a love of non-Western religions. But that's, again, just a little bit of a background for who we are. This fall, we've been inviting our listeners. We need to grow. We want to grow this conversation. And so we're asking our listeners to share your favorite What in God's Name podcast with your friends and social network. Thank you for all of you who are doing that, because, as I say, our listenership is growing. Shayna, in the news today, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but we wanted to acknowledge that Nancy Pelosi has come out in favor of beginning this process of impeachment. Did you have anything that you wanted to say about that?
Well, just briefly, and again, it's so new that and so fresh off the press. We say we don't break the news, we break it down, but here we are. Well, we're not actually breaking the news, because I'm sure most of our listeners have heard about this by now. It's curious to me, and I'm not sure what it means, to be honest with you, because there are already committees within the Democratic House who are investigating the administration There is obviously now a new issue that has come up involving a phone call with the head of the Ukraine. And now there's some question as to whether or not President Trump has overstepped the line yet again. But I think, you know, what's sort of challenging for me at this point is, you know, I'm asking myself sort of what took so long. I understand the Democrats in the House were saying, well, you know, it won't pass in the Senate. It won't work favorably for us in the elections. And I think those are crummy reasons to not do something. I think if it's the right thing to do, you do it, period. End of conversation. And that's what we trust our leaders to do. If somebody has done something that jeopardizes our democracy, if someone has done something that runs at crosshairs with the pledge they made to uphold the Constitution, then we have to ethically and morally stand up and say that's not acceptable.
So the politics of this particular question are interesting, but beyond the scope of this show, if you want a political analysis of what is happening, you will find much better sources than What in God's Name. But one thing that is really interesting, which we're not going to talk about, but I do, I will lift it up as a question, which you alluded to, what is the relationship between ethics and morality and politics? What happens when political considerations
outweigh the ethical and moral? Yes.
Outweigh the ethical and moral. I think that, now that is well within the wheelhouse of What in God's Name.
And something we'll probably take on as this thing unfolds.
Yeah. And even if it wasn't this particular issue of impeachment, it's a question that comes up a lot.
Oh, sure. Today, what we wanted to talk a little bit about was reflect on the events of the past week and the climate strike that took place involving millions of people in thousands of locations around the globe.
When you were away, I did a solo show on this question. And so part of our retouching this is to give you an opportunity. When I did the solo show 2 weeks ago on this, I asked the question, if I don't believe that climate change is an emergency, does that make me a climate denier? And I lifted up some of the rhetoric around emergency and our house is burning. And how do you respond to the language of emergency and the house is burning down?
Well, that's a great question, Chris, because as somebody who has served almost my entire lifetime in emergency services, in public safety and fire departments and pre-hospital emergency medicine, you know, I'm gonna divert to Ecclesiastes. To everything there is a time and a season for every matter under heaven. There is a time to stand up and scream the house is on fire. Generally speaking, that is when the house is on fire. It is illegal to stand up and say that the house is on fire if it's not on fire. That having been said, I can't tell you the number of times that I've been in a situation where we were responding to a possible fire in an apartment complex. Smoke is filling the halls. The fire alarms are screaming, and we're pounding on doors, and people are sitting around their dinner tables. Oh, well, we just thought it was an alarm, you know, so that refuse, well, it's not an alarm, and now we need to get you out the window because we can't get you down the stairs, you know. You've complicated this whole rescue situation by not evacuating the building when the damn alarm went off. So I take great umbrage to the abuse of emergency language because I think it tends to dull people to, you know, it's the boy who cried wolf syndrome when we really have a problem. And I don't think we should scream that the building is on fire if it's not. So then that comes down to really the question of, is the building actually on fire? Based on what I'm seeing, this is not what I grew up with. I'm only 59 years old. So if this has gone this far downhill in my lifetime, how much further is it going to go downhill in my children's lifetime, in my nieces and nephews' lifetime? And frankly, that's terrifying enough for me to hedge my bet on the side that the house is on fire, because if it's not, but we take the, you know, the alarm's going off. Guys, we'll come back to dinner in a minute. If we have to reheat it, we'll reheat it. Let's everybody step away from the table now. Why? Because if it happens to not be a false alarm, it would be good for us not to be in the building. You know, you hope for the best, but you prepare for the worst. That's generally our motto. And And so, yeah, I'm not a science expert. I can't tell you if the house is actually on fire, but I think it does behoove us to act as if it is right now.
Let me outline some theological questions with regards to climate change, and it has to do with the place of human beings in the world, on the planet, as part of creation. So one extreme is there is no God, there is no divine order, that we're alone in the universe, and so what happens on this planet is totally up to us. We can destroy it, we have the power, everything depends on us. No God. The other extreme is, well, God will take care of it. It's the theology of, well, I can just go limp. It's all in God's hands. Have faith.
Funny how those two, while they seem initially to be at opposite ends of the spectrum, are effectively flip sides of the same coin.
Now, I don't think this is true about every question that arises ethically, morally, theologically, that the middle ground is the right spot. But in this one, I do. There is a middle ground where we have to acknowledge our limitations and also take responsibility that indeed we are called to act.
I think the two points on the spectrum that you began with, the A theology and the versus the God will take care of theology, both in their own way, place a high priority on the omniscience and omnipotence of God. One says, I refuse to believe that there is an omniscient or omnipotent God, and the other, God is omniscient and omnipotent. And I think in the middle ground, there is that place that process theologians have, you know, staked out some ground. And this is the space that I hear you talking to, which is that idea that, you know, while God is not omniscient, in other words, everything that is going to happen has not been already written down in some book, someplace, thereby relegating God to autopilot. God is not omnipotent, meaning we are more than puppets on a string, and God is way more than a tyrant who pulls those strings, but that God has a preferred option for us and meets us on the forming edge of our lives. It is up to us to find our higher angels and to act in accordance with them. That ability for humanity to dig deep. And again, whether or not, you know, you're a theist or an atheist, I hope we can all agree that humanity has the capacity for greatness as well as a capacity for absolute baseness.
I loved how you characterized the
middle way, theology.
Yeah. Because what I heard you say there is that the two extremes that I outlined were encounters with the omnipotent omniscient, which is not a living God. It's a dead idea of God, distant, abstract. The atheist rejects that dead abstraction, and the simplistic, blind faith accepts that.
Maybe traditionalist?
Maybe. I mean, we need to figure out what the right term is.
You know, when I hear people say, like, well, now I know why God, you know, whatever comes after that, it's like, you know, I can just hear God in the book of Job. Where were you, you little shit? You know, when I hung the stars in the sky, when I, you don't know anything, mortal. And we don't know the mind of God. We don't know the will of God. All we can do is turn inward, trusting that each of us is created in the divine image and that spark is in there somewhere. When we emanate from that spark, and again, you know, you see it. Texas floods, people show up with boats. They got this thing, I think we've talked about it before, the Cajun Navy, you know, which is just a bunch of people with boats who show up and put them in the water and start pulling people out without respect for race, ethnicity, who you love, where you come from, what team you root for. They don't care. Your house is flooded and we're getting you out of here.
There's a living encounter with other human beings at that point.
Yes.
Not abstractions.
Not an abstraction. Yeah. And because I've done enough disaster work to be in the midst of those experiences, I can tell you from my perspective, it is absolutely a place where one experiences God, you know, as profound love for one another. So this assumption that, you know, this assumption that anybody could make an assumption that we are here, we are alone, we are isolated people. It's like, yeah, you know, once you've actually seen the architecture of our interdependence, not just each to each, but each to each and each to all, you know, when you've seen that architecture, you can no more deny that than you can deny access to your next breath.
Yeah. So what I heard you say with regards to climate change in the context of process theology is that dealing with the question of climate change in our environment actually calls us to a living encounter with divinity, not the abstraction.
For those who have eyes to see.
For the right.
Ears to hear and hearts to feel. I mean, how do you explain this global strike in the absence of an architecture that binds us each to each and each to all?
Which can be grounded in theology, but doesn't necessarily have to be.
Doesn't necessarily have to. It's what I call theology. It's that, you know, that
right,
that
but
is
some
ultimate,
won't. Some won't, don't, and don't want
fine.
To. But they do feel the connection.
But they do feel the connection.
A second theological question I wanted to raise with you has to do with, again, the place of the human being in creation, the place of the human being on earth. Where do we fit? A little bit of context about the question I want to ask you is this. When oil was discovered and put into use and started becoming part of the fabric of how modern life happens, there was great, great optimism about how oil would liberate people and create this great society of plenty. It was a time of great optimism about the capabilities of human beings. There's a similar idea, a similar spirit that animates people with regards to renewables, that this is the next great thing that will propel everyone to prosperity and happiness for all. And so here's my critique. If we are thinking that we can just keep living the way we're living and just substitute renewables for fossil fuels, but we can just keep consuming as much as we consume, using as much energy as we currently do, then I think we are lying to ourselves.
Absolutely.
So, and the theological piece of this, and I frame it as theology, but again, it's the place of the human being. Just plugging in renewables for fossil fuels isn't going to get at what we really need to get at, which is consumerism, wastefulness,
exploitation,
domination, that whole sense of domination and exploitation.
Right.
So just because we use a bunch of renewables doesn't mean that we're out of that pattern of exploitation, domination, an oversized or outsized footprint on the planet.
Agreed. I couldn't agree with you more. And I, you know, the early scriptures from the book of Genesis, which, okay, that's environmentalism 101. In the scripture, God appointed us stewards. There's been a lot of discussion about the word dominion. God gave man dominion over all of creation, and dominion having the same root as dominance is a word that is often misunderstood, that what God really gave us was care of all of creation. What's interesting is that when you look at indigenous populations around the globe, indigenous peoples understood well that one had to live in harmony with creation. So they paid attention to, you know, what herds they were harvesting, how they were planting, how they were using the soil, and understood that it was a gift. They cherished the gift that was given to them. They gave thanks for the gift that was given to them, and they took great care of it.
One of the points I'm driving at with that observation is that we're not just, or we cannot just be looking for some kind of technological fix, i.e. replacing fossil fuels with renewables.
Yeah, no,
but there's a deeper...
There's a much deeper...
Attitudinal...
Yes.
One might even call it a conversion of the mindset of...
Taking this all for granted.
Yeah.
You know, just assuming that the earth is going to be here forever.
And that it's ours to use.
And abuse.
And abuse. Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine a light.
This has been What in God's Name. He is Chris Owen.
And she is Shana Appel.
And thank you again for tuning in with us. We look forward to being with you next week.
You can go to our website, www.whatingods.com. WHATINGODS. There you can find our shows. You can invite other people to go to our website to learn more about What in God's Name. We look forward to opportunities to carrying on the conversation with you. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time, Chris.